Thanks. So first of all, of course, I'd like to thank the organizers of the conference for putting together such an interesting program and giving me the chance to speak. And yes, today I'll be talking to you about an area of research that's received a lot of attention lately, and that's the holographic description of something called non-relativistic conformal field theories. So here's an outline of my talk. I'll begin with giving some background. I'll discuss briefly the two topics of my title, holography and non-relativistic CFTs. And I'll give some motivation for why a holographic description of these CFTs is something worth pursuing. Then I'll move on to discuss the geometry that's dual to these CFTs. And I'll talk about an embedding of this geometry in string theory and the finite temperature generalization that results. And then I'll move on to work that we just put on the archive a few weeks ago, which extends something called the fluid gravity correspondence to these non-relativistic theories. And then finally, depending on how much time I have left, I will have some concluding slides. And I apologize in advance if my talk isn't as entertaining as the previous one. Okay, so.
It would be more substantive, though. It's scary.
You had a lot of topics. So, given the time limitations and the very diverse background of our audience, it's difficult to present adequate background on everything I'm talking about, but I did want to have at least one slide explaining what I mean by holography in the context I'm using it. So a major focus of research in the particle theory community over the last 10 years is a class of methods that go alternatively by the names holography or AES-CFT correspondence or gauge gravity duality. And while all these names do have a slightly different connotation, they more or less refer to the same class of methods. So the name holography comes from an idea that Hooke and Suskind put forth in the early 90s. And they hypothesized that if you have some theory of gravity that lives on some space-time, it should be entirely describable in terms of some degrees of freedom living on the boundary of that space-time. And so this was just a conjecture whose main motivation was the area law for black hole entropy. But this is referred to as holography because you're encoding some higher dimensional information in a surface of one fewer dimensions, just like in a hologram. So in his famous conjecture of 1997, Aldestana provided us with an explicit example of holography. So we looked at a stack of something called D3 grains in string theory, and he looked at this from two different perspectives. And he was able to argue that a certain type of string theory on this curved space-time, so here ADS is anti-de Sitter space, S5 is just a phi-sphere. So he said that string theory on this curved space-time is equivalent to a supersymmetric non-abelian gauge theory that, in some sense, lives on the boundary of the AES space. So the n equals 4 here is just the number of supersymmetry generators of our theory. But if you're not familiar with this nomenclature, don't worry about it. But I will be using the words n equals 4 to refer to this particular field theory throughout the talk. And it turns out that this n equals 4 theory has conformal symmetry, which it's just a symmetry algebra that includes scale invariants. And for this reason, this is called the ADS-CFT correspondence. And this is an example of holography because we have a string theory here in the bulk of ADS space. String theory, of course, includes gravity. And this has an equivalent description in terms of some degrees of freedom living on the boundary, in this case, a gauge theory. So in the intervening 11 years, there have been many extensions and many generalizations of this model, of this correspondence. With the generic feature that you have some gauge theory that's dual to some gravity theory. And for this reason, this is also referred to as gauge gravity duality. So the precise details of this correspondence, you know, a dictionary telling you how to translate quantities on one side to the other side, has been rather thoroughly developed. I don't have time to go through it today. But one aspect that I do want to mention is that so on the string side, in order for our calculations to be tractable, we need to take a limit where the stringing and quantum effects are small. And it turns out, on the field theory side, these limits correspond to taking the limit of a large n, where n is the number of colors of your gauge theory, and also to large coupling. So this is both a positive and negative feature of this large coupling, because, well, on the negative side, it makes the correspondence difficult to test, because the regimes of applicability of this duality don't overlap. On the field theory side, of course, we want weak coupling, but we can only calculate on the gravity side strong coupling. So this makes the correspondence difficult to test. But once you've accrued enough evidence that you believe the correspondence to be true, which by now I believe everyone would agree that we have, this is a virtue, because now you have a tool to calculate strongly coupled processes in a quantum field theory using only classical gravity. So one trend that I want to mention is that because many of the unsolved problems of condensed matter physics occur at strong coupling, recently many people have been constructing models of condensed matter phenomena using holography. And examples include the transport properties of strongly coupled plasmas, superconductors, superfluids, the quantum Hall effect. And what I'll be talking about today is another example of a holographic model of a strongly coupled condensed matter system. In particular, we're going to talk about something called non-relativistic conformal field theories, or NRCFTs. So what are these? These are just field theories that have the non-relativistic version of our familiar relativistic conformal symmetry. The symmetry algebra is called the Schrodinger algebra, and it's so called because it's the algebra that corresponds to the full invariance group of the free Schrodinger equation. And how do you construct this algebra? Well, instead of starting with the Poincaré algebra, you start with the Galilean algebra. So this has generators of time translation, generators of space translation, spatial rotations, Galilean boosts. And it also has this operator M, which commutes with everything. It's a central charge. And this corresponds to conserved mass in our theory. And it makes sense to have conserved mass in this theory because it's a non-relativistic theory. So it doesn't necessarily have to have particle production. And just like in the familiar relativistic case, we then enhance the Galilean algebra by adding a generator of scale transformations and a generator of conformal transformations. And note that the scaling operator treats space and time differently, but again, this should be expected in a non-relativistic theory. So why is this symmetry?
I'm sorry?
Yes.
So this Pauli tool is fixed for some reason?
So there has been a lot of work done on models that don't have this power of two, but in order to have this conformal generator, you need the power of two.
There's no other kind of generalization of this group to other formations.
What's it, sorry?
Is there any generalization of this group to other formations?
I haven't seen any generalizations of the conformal transformation to other dynamical plasmas, but I'm not positive that they don't exist. Because people, even when they treat z equals not equals to 2, they still call them conformal field theories, which kind of confuses me because it seems like they're not, but I'm not sure. So why is this symmetry interesting? Well, the main reason is that there are actually experimentally realized systems that have this symmetry. And the primary example of this is something called fermions at unitarity. So this is a system of fermions interacting through some short-range potential. And you fine-tune the parameters of this potential such that the scattering length is actually infinite. And so if you take the limit where the potential is actually zero range, and you have an infinite scattering length, this means there's no inherent scale in the problem. And this allows for the necessary scale invariance in our Schrodinger algebra. But it also implies, if you have a short-range potential and infinite scattering length, that this system is strongly coupled. So fermions at unitarity is an inherently strongly coupled system. And this brings with it the usual problems. It's just difficult to have theoretical control over strongly coupled systems. So we've seen that holography provides a nice tool in the relativistic case to describe scale invariant theories. So a natural question to ask is, for non-relativistic scale invariant theories, can we also formulate a holographic model to get some control over the strong coupling dynamics? And it turns out, at least for some NRCFTs, that the answer is yes. So the groundwork for this was laid by Song and by Kala Subramani and Vinagrivi earlier this year. And the first step to developing a holographic model of these CFTs is to find the geometry on which your dual theory has to live. So a key feature of ADS-CFT is that the global symmetry group of your field theory shows up on the gravity side as the isometry group of your space-time. So in the canonical example, the isometry group of AdS5 is just a relativistic conformal group. And the isometry group of the S5 shows up on your field theory side as the symmetry that allows you to rotate your supersymmetry generators into one another. And so the analog here is we need to find a metric whose isometry group is the Schrodinger group that I talked about a couple slides ago. And the key step in realizing this geometry is to notice that the Schrodinger group in D space dimensions is actually a subgroup of the relativistic conformal group in one higher dimension. And so this means, since we know that the isometry group of AdS space just gives you the relativistic conformal group, if we start with an ADSL geometry, we just need to deform that geometry in such a way that only the Schrodinger subgroup of the isometry is preserved. And I've written a metric that accomplishes this down here at the bottom. So the second piece, this is just ADS D plus 3, where I've chosen one of my spatial coordinates to combine with my time and form light cone coordinates. So this is just ADS D plus 3 and light cone coordinates. And here's just some deformation of this algebra that only preserves the Schrodinger subgroup. So you can work out the isometries of this metric, and you can see how they correspond to the generator of the Schrodinger algebra, and you can check that the commutation relations are satisfied, and they are. So let me just make some comments on this geometry. As usual, and when we introduce light cone coordinates, we interpret x plus as the time. And these x's that remain, the x's that aren't chosen to form light cone coordinates, just become the spatial coordinates of our non-relativistic theory. But we have this extra coordinate, x minus, floating around. And this is because, as I mentioned, when you embed Schrodinger in the conformal group, is one in one higher dimension. So we have this extra coordinate, x minus, that we need to interpret. And if you work out explicitly what the embedding of the Schrodinger algebra in this geometry is, it turns out that the isometries corresponding to translations in your x minus direction get mapped onto this conserved mass operator of your non-relativistic theory. And so the non-relativistic theories that we're typically dealing with have some non-relativistic particle species. It has a fixed mass. And then a state in the theory just has some number of that particle. So your mass spectrum is discretized. It's just multiples of that fundamental mass. So if we want a discrete mass spectrum, it suggests that we take this x minus direction to be compact. Note that we don't need to take x minus to be compact with this formalism. It's just a natural thing to do if you want a discretized mass spectrum. Another thing to note about this geometry is that the metric is not Einstein, so it's not a solution to gravity plus a cosmological constant. You need to introduce some new fields coupling to gravity in order for this geometry to be a solution. But we should expect that, because we're constructing these non-relativistic theories by taking a relativistic theory, going to some distinguished frame, and taking down our non-relativistic limit relative to this frame. But in order to distinguish some frame, we need a background of stuff. And so that's why you need other fields coupling to gravity. And finally, an encouraging sign about this geometry, you can put a scalar field phi on this geometry and just use the standard ADS-CFT techniques to calculate its two-point correlation function. And you find it takes this form. But this is exactly the form of the two-point function of scalar fields that's required by non-relativistic conformal symmetry. So this is an encouraging sign that the geometry we've written down really is the dual of some non-relativistic CFT. So far we just have a geometry that has the right symmetries and the right two-point function to describe an NR CFT. But we don't know anything about which fields should be coupling to gravity, and we don't know anything about the field theory that this setup is dual to. In order to have such an explicit example, we need to embed this geometry in string theory. So for the case of Q spatial dimensions, this was accomplished in three papers that actually appeared on the archive on the same day. So one by Herzog, Nagamani, and Ross, one by Montesano and Martelli and Tachikawa. Of course, we'll be hearing from him in a couple of days at this conference. And one by Adams, Balasubramani, and Agrivi. And so the way these authors were able to embed the geometry in string theory was via these solution-generating techniques in supergravity. So one of them is called the null Melvin twist, and one of them is called the TST transformation. So the details of these techniques aren't that important to us today. They're just some rather arcane set of rules that takes one solution of supergravity into another solution of supergravity. And these authors noticed that if you apply these transformations to a geometry that's initially ADS, then you get out something that is Schrodinger. So in particular, our canonical example of ADS CFT has a solution to supergravity with ADS geometry. So you can apply these transformations to this canonical solution, and you get out a solution to type 2B supergravity with a Schrodinger geometry. And on the field theory side, the non-relativistic theory that results from this procedure is just the like one reduction of some deformation of your original n equals 4 theory.
Questions?
Yes?
The solution is a n-dimensional solution, right?
Yes.
It has to preserve some supersymmetry?
No, there's no supersymmetry.
The n-dimensional solution is not supersymmetric.
Right.
Is it the near horizon limit of any objects that's known?
Do you have a brain formulation of it? I don't think so. Not that I know. Nobody's mentioned it, so I'm assuming that.
Is it obvious that an n-dimensional solution is stable from the way it's constructed, or
not always? Not always. Okay. Yeah. Not always. Okay, where was it? Yes, okay, good. So once you have this this technique for generating these Schrodinger geometries, the generalization of the geometries to the finite temperature case is rather immediate. So in the standard ADS-CFT formulation, the way to put your field theory at finite temperature is to introduce a black hole into your spacetime. So if we've seen that applying one of these transformations just to ADS space gives you a geometry with Schrodinger symmetries, it should be no surprise that if we apply these transformations to the finite temperature version of the ADS geometry, we get the finite temperature version of the Schrodinger geometry. And the authors of those three papers carried this procedure out, and they found a solution. I'm not going to write it down for you, but so the original ADS finite temperature geometry contains one parameter R plus the horizon radius, and this sets the temperature of your dual field theory. But the solutions that result from these transformations now depend on another parameter, beta. And the authors were able to work out the thermodynamics of these geometries. They found that these two parameters, R plus and beta, are now setting both the temperature of the dual field theory, but also the chemical potential of the dual field theory. And it makes sense to be talking about a chemical potential here because we remember we have this conserved mass in our non-relativistic CFTs. So they're also able to work out some other properties of the thermodynamics. Another encouraging sign is that they found that the energy density is equal to the pressure. And this is, so for a non-relativistic informal field theory in d spatial dimensions, epsilon has to be equal to d over 2 times p. So for d equals 2, this is the correct equation of state for a non-relativistic CFT. They were also able to calculate the shear viscosity. And if you take the ratio of the entropy density, you get 1 over 4 pi. So for those of you familiar with the KSS bound, this just tells you that these theories are saturating the KSS bound, even though they're non-relativistic. And finally, this is work that was done later by Kovtun and Nichols, but if you look at how the energy scales as you take the temperature to zero while holding your density finite and constant, it goes to zero. And the reason why I mentioned that is because this scaling is something that can be measured in the experimental realizations of fermions at unitarity, and it's not zero. So this is telling us that whatever these NRCFTs that we are modeling holographically are not fermions at unitarity. All right, so we've constructed a geometry, and we've embedded in string theory, and we've found its finite temperature generalization for these NRCFTs. Now I want to talk about work that was just recently completed in correspondence with Rangamani, Ross, Stone. And this is extending something known as the fluid gravity correspondence to the case of these non-relativistic conformal field theories. So in the modern viewpoint, hydrodynamics is just the long wavelength effective theory of any system that's achieved local equilibrium. And in particular, at high enough energy densities, you expect any field theory to locally equilibrate. And therefore, the long wavelength description of these field theories should be hydrodynamics. And given what I've said about the ADS CFT correspondence, this suggests that if you were able to take the analog long wavelength limit on the gravity side, you should be able to recover the equations of hydrodynamics from gravity. And there's been lots of work done towards this end. But what I want to focus on today is the formalism put forth by Bhattacharya, Ubani, Manwala, and Rangamani last year. And they're able to come up with a systematic procedure for carrying out this boundary derivative expansion on the gravity side and reproducing the equations of hydrodynamics. And so in order to do this, they had to introduce the idea of local equilibrium on the gravity side. And so if you have some black hole whose horizon radius is setting the temperature, the way to incorporate local equilibrium, local thermal equilibrium, is you instead let your horizon radius promote it to a slowly varying function of the boundary coordinates. And then on the field theory, that'll correspond to local thermal equilibrium. Likewise, you want some slowly varying fluid velocity in your boundary theory, and so they boost these black hole solutions by some four velocity, and then they allow that four velocity also to be a slowly varying function of the boundary coordinates. And then they take these metrics, they plug them into Einstein's equations, they carry out a systematic order by order expansion in terms of the boundary derivatives, and they find that Einstein's equations are only satisfied if your corresponding boundary hydrodynamics are satisfied. And furthermore, they find that for any field theory that's dual to some gravity living on ADS space, the transport coefficients that are showing up in your boundary hydrodynamics have to take very particular values. And they work out what those values are up to second order in your boundary hydro.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
So this fluid, it is hydrodynamic equation. What are the speed of sound for the propagating mass?
I don't remember offhand.
So is it subluminal or is it bond or?
It's subluminal.
It's subluminal.
Yeah, so what we wanted to do was carry out the analog of this fluid gravity correspondence for non-relativistic systems. We wanted to find what for those in our CFTs that are dual to the geometry to discuss, what are the constraints put on the transport coefficients? And we also wanted to find the metric dual to arbitrary fluid flow in our non-relativistic theories. So the first step towards accomplishing this is we found a mapping that takes any relativistic hydrodynamical theory, reduces it on the light cone, and gives you back a non-relativistic hydrodynamical theory living in one less dimension. And so let me work quickly through how this works. So our relativistic hydro in D plus two dimensions is described by some thermodynamic quantity here, T. You could also choose it to be any of the other thermodynamic quantities related to T by the equation C. And a four velocity U mu, where U mu is constrained to square to minus one. Our equations of motion for relativistic hydro are entirely encapsulated in energy and momentum conservation. We just need to express a stress energy tensor in terms of our fluid dynamical variables. And so I've written out the first order expansion here of T mu nu. I haven't written out what tau mu nu is, but it contains first derivatives of our fluid dynamical variables. And note that there's one transport coefficient for conformal relativistic hydro. In general, there's the second one. This is the shear viscosity. In general, there's a second one, the bulk viscosity, but the trace distance condition for the stress energy tensor requires the bulk viscosity to vanish. Okay, so what about our non-relativistic theory in one less dimension? Well, because of this conserved mass that we have, there are now two thermodynamic quantities, the density rho and the temperature T. And we have the d spatial velocity. So once again, we have d plus 2 degrees of freedom, the same as in our relativistic theory in one more dimension. And now the equations of motion just consist of the continuity equation, conservation of momentum, conservation of energy. And again, we just need to express the momentum tensor and the energy current in terms of our fluid variables. And to first order, this is done here, where again, sigma contains first derivatives of these quantities, and here's an explicit first derivative of the temperature. And note now that we have two transport coefficients showing up, the shear viscosity and the heat conductivity. And again, generally for non-relativistic hydro, there's a bulk viscosity, but in the conformal case, it vanishes. And so what we did is we took the variables of our relativistic theory. We demanded that they only depend on the coordinates of our non-relativistic theory, which means we did not allow them to depend on x minus. And then we found a mapping of these relativistic variables to the non-relativistic variables such that the fact that these equations, the relativistic equations, are satisfied implies that these non-relativistic equations are satisfied. And so here are the details of that mapping. We were able to fix everything showing up in the non-relativistic theory in terms of the relativistic quantities. In particular, we could calculate what the non-relativistic shear viscosity should be. And if we take the ratio of eta to s, we find 1 over 4 pi, which is nice. It agrees with what the other authors had found. And the new piece of information is that we found that the heat conductivity kappa is uniquely determined by the relativistic theory from which this non-relativistic theory was derived. So what this tells us is that if you have any non-relativistic theory that is arising from the light cone reduction of some relativistic theory, it has very particular hydrodynamical properties that are entirely determined by that relativistic theory. So this was done all on the field theory side. We haven't done anything with the gravity yet, but we found that for those NRC of T's that have been embedded in string theory, they have to have this heat capacity. So that was our first goal. We wanted to find what constraints are placed on the transport coefficients of these theories. Our other goal was to construct the metric dual to arbitrary fluid flow. So let me just outline in principle how this calculation could have worked. So this is just the analog of the procedure that Bhattacharya et al. Used. So you would start with the finite temperature, finite chemical potential, Schrodinger geometry that I mentioned before. You would change to a system of coordinates that are manifestly regular everywhere outside the singularity, including through the event horizon. And then you would perform a Galilean boost. So now your solution would depend on beta and R plus from the original metric, and now also the spatial velocity Vi. And then you just promote these parameters to be slowly varying functions of your boundary coordinates. You would plug the resulting metric into Einstein's equations, expand order by order in boundary derivatives, and you would find that Einstein's equations are only solved if the corresponding boundary hydrodynamics are solved for the particular values of the transport coefficients that we worked out through our mapping. And this is a straightforward procedure, but it's also rather cumbersome and tedious. So instead of taking that path, we used a trick. We just used this TST transformation. So we saw before that applying this transformation onto an ADS geometry gives you Schrodinger geometry. We saw that applying this transformation to the finite temperature generalization gave you a finite temperature generalization with the Schrodinger symmetry. So again, it should be no surprise that if we just take the metrics that have already been constructed that are dual to arbitrary fluid flow in the Nichols-4 case, and then apply the CST transformation, that will get the metrics that are dual to arbitrary fluid flow and the non-relativistic case. So we carry out this procedure in the paper. One thing to note is that the solution you start out with from Bhattacharya et al. Depends on the relativistic parameters, r plus and the four velocity. But we want our metric to depend on the non-relativistic quantities. So we just use the mapping that I wrote down a few slides ago to convert these relativistic quantities into non-relativistic quantities. And then we perform the TST transformation. And the solution that we get has these slowly varying functions, beta r plus and bi. And by construction, if we set the velocities to 0 and set these two parameters to be constants, it reduces to the finite temperature, finite chemical potential geometry that I discussed earlier. And therefore, when you do let these functions vary, they must be precisely the metric that you would have gotten if you had carried out this procedure. And what remains, if you want to find your boundary height dynamics, you just need to interpret these parameters beta and r plus in terms of your fluid dynamical variables. And we accomplish this just by using the thermodynamics of our system. All right, so let me move on to a few slides of conclusions. So what's been done? Well, gravity duals of non-relativistic conformal theories have been constructed. They have the right symmetries. They have the right two-point function. They have the right equation of state. Those NRCFTs that we've actually been able to embed in string theory have very particular thermodynamics and hydrodynamics. And in particular, I pointed out earlier that these cannot be the correct duals to be fermions at unitarity. But we can say that we've taken the first steps towards the gravity dual of fermions at unitarity. And one thing that I think is a very interesting aspect of these holographic models is that in some sense, it's a new type of holography. Our non-relativistic field theories are living in two dimensions less than the geometry. And if you look at the geometries I wrote down, their boundaries are actually one-dimensional. Even in the ADS case, you can't exactly say that the field theory lives on the boundary. But even here, our field theories are appearing to live in d dimensions and d plus one dimensions, and the boundary is only one-dimensional. And also, a lot of the machinery of the standard ADS key correspondence that involves these asymptotic expansions near the boundary doesn't carry over to these non-relativistic cases. So the fact that we can write down these geometries that look so different from the standard ADS-CFT examples and apply some of our ADS-CFT rules and get something out that looks like a sensible non-relativistic CFT, I think suggests that these holographic methods are perhaps more general than one might first have expected. So what hasn't been done, as I mentioned, we have not constructed a gravity dual of fermions at unitarity. And here are some of the problems. For the embeddings we found, d equals 2 rather than d equals 3. And well, this has been addressed in the work by Kofson and Nichols, where they didn't find embeddings, string theory embeddings in other dimensions, but they did generalize these geometries to higher dimensions. But for any d, they still found that the scaling of this energy is the temperature goes to 0. It goes to 0. So even for their d equals 3 example, it can't be dual to fermions at unitarity. Something else we're lacking in our models is superfluidity, whereas the experimentally realized fermions at unitarity do exhibit superfluidity. And finally, this is just a general problem that would make you expect that it would be difficult to formulate a gravity dual of fermions at unitarity, and that is that there's no parameter n analogous to the number of colors in your SUN gauge theory to take large. So if you remember, the reason why we work in the large n limit in ADS-CFT is in order to suppress quantum effects on the string side. So the fact that we can't take some large n limit suggests that there should be, in whatever the gravity dual of fermions at unitarity is, there should be unsuppressed quantum effects. Now, there is a generalization of fermions at unitarity that have an SP2N symmetry. and actually in some recent work done in a paper, two of whose authors are actually here at Perimeter, they looked at related systems that had an SP2 engaged symmetry, and they worked out the leading 1/n corrections to some quantities. But it's not clear how those models relate to fermions at unitarity. Okay, so things to do. One thing that Sun and I are looking at is a so-called bottom-up construction of these non-relativistic CFTs with superfluidity. So the idea here is that instead of having some string theory embedding where you know what your gravity solution is and you know exactly what field theory this corresponds to, here you start with behaviors in the field theory that you want to have, and then using your general knowledge of how ADS CFT works, you put things on the gravity side that will create these features that you want. So in particular, we want to come up with a bottom-up model that has superfluidity, but also this non-relativistic conformal symmetry. Something else you could do, this would be to get around the problem of this energy scaling, is to look for other geometries that are asymptotically Schrodinger, other than the ones that have already been constructed through these solution-generating transformations. Something else to get over the problem of the wrong dimensionality is that we could start with some ADS6 solutions in string theory and then apply these transformations to get D equals 3 non-relativistic gravity duals. And then finally, something that this isn't necessarily related to fermions at unitarity, but this is a project that's already underway with Andreas Karch and Peter Sorovka, is that we're putting these non-relativistic conformal field theories on a space with a defect. And we know that just as in the relativistic case, if you put an NRCFT on a space with a defect, the theory should be highly constrained, the correlation functions and other properties. But nobody's worked out what these constraints are. So we're hopeful that by constructing a holographic model of these defects in our CFTs, we'll be able to work out what those constraints are. Okay, thank you.
Any questions from the non-experts? Yeah, first. Any questions from experts?
We had a non-expert question.
Yes.
So when you're looking for superfluidity, you're looking for a field theory with long range order, or?
Yeah, you want a condensation of some charge scalar field. And so in the non-relativistic case, this is going to break the conserved mass of the string.
Any other questions? Awesome question.
Yes.
So you said that you can't incorporate a parameter n, you can't use any.
Yes.
No,
that's just fermions in unitary in general. So that's just for these particular experimentally realized systems, we have some theoretical models of them. Well, there's just no parameter n in the experimental systems that you can take. It's not like SU, you have SU3, you can take SU, and there's no equivalent parameter.
Any final questions? All right, let's thank you again.